We'll discuss three verses. Canto 3 text, Canto 3 chapter 7, further inquiries by Vidura, and we'll discuss texts 5, 6, and 7. Vidura is speaking to Maitreya. He's heard about the process of creation. You can maybe recall the discussion we had a month ago about the role of Virat Rupa and the demigods and the Lord's desire and the living entities, and things become manifest. By his spiritual potency. And the question that we spoke about previously was basically one of the classic questions: how from something spiritual to something material come? He who is unchanging, how does that which change occurs in come from him? Nirguna Saguna. Then, the fall of the jiva question. You know that one, right? Once upon a time, living entities were in the spiritual world and everything is full of bliss, knowledge, and eternality, and then they fell. How did that happen? The fall of the jiva. So, it doesn't state it that way, it states it this way. Text number 5. The pure soul is in pure consciousness and is never out of consciousness, either due to circumstances, time, situations, dreams, or other causes. How then does he become engaged in nescience? The answer isn't given yet, it's just that's the question. Purport. There's Srimad Bhagavatam reference, Bhagavad Gita reference, and Vishnu Purana reference in the purport. The consciousness of the living being is always present and never changes under any circumstances, as mentioned above. When a living man moves from one place to another, he is conscious that he has changed his position. He is always present in the past, present, and future like electricity. One can remember incidents from his past and can conjecture about his future also on the basis of past experience. He never forgets his personal identity, even though he is placed in awkward circumstances. How then can the living entity become forgetful of his real identity as pure spirit soul and identify with matter unless influenced by something beyond himself? There's the key. Consciousness becomes covered by something beyond ourselves. And there's something that prompts being covered, and there's something that prompts being uncovered. That is, that other entity covering and uncovering. So, the conclusion is that living entity is influenced by the avidya potency, as confirmed in both the Vishnu Purana and the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam. What's that in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam? Oh, Canto 1, Srimad Bhagavatam scholars. First verse. Okay, but what's the part of that verse that expresses the living entity is covered? Muyanti Atsuraya. even what to speak of us, even great demigods, are deluded by the by him, even the great demigods and sages are placed into illusion, as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature appear to be factual, although they are unreal. Tejo vari vritam yata vinimayo yatra trisargo mrsha. Dhamna svena sadana rasta kuhakam. Kuhakam is illusion. So that's Srimad Bhagavatam. Then comes Bhagavad Gita. The living entity is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita 7.5 as Para Prakriti, and in the Vishnu Purana he is mentioned as Para Shakti. Do any of you happen to know that verse? Okay. Vishnu Shakti Para Prokta. He is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord as potency and not as the potent. The potent at any time. Excuse me. He's not. It cannot, the potent can exhibit many potencies, but the potency cannot equal the potent at any time. One potency may be overcome by another potency, but to the potent, all potencies are under control. The jiva potency, or the kshetragya, was it? Vishnu Shakti Para Prokta Kshetragya Tatata Para Avidya Karma Sangyaya Chittiya something something something. So the jiva potency, or the Kshetragya Shakti of the Lord, has the tendency to be overpowered by the external potency, Avidya Karma Sangya. And in this way he is placed in an awkward circumstance of material existence. The living entity cannot be forgetful of his real identity unless influenced by the avidya potency, because the living entity is prone to be influenced by the avidya potency. He can never be equal to the Supreme Potent. I was just today listening to Srila Prabhupada explain in different language that the living entity he didn't say the consciousness can become covered, although normally he does say like that. He was discussing that life, the principle of life comes from life, that life doesn't evolve from matter. As the universe grows because of the presence of God within the universe, bodies grow because of the presence of the touch of spirit within matter. Then he was speaking about consciousness. And scientists say, male and female emulsifications in a period of 7 months, then there's consciousness. Matter produces consciousness. That's one of their justifications, rationales, that abortion is okay because there isn't life yet. That's their notion. And Prabhupada was referring to it. He didn't say, you know, that's their basis of abortion, but he says the scientists say there's not consciousness before 7 months. But the soul is present. But there's three states, according to Bhagavatam, Vedas, there's three states of consciousness. That's the deep sleep state, susupti. And then there's the sleeping and dreaming state, and then there's the awake state. And there's gradations in between. Like people ask you, did you rest well last night? And part of it depends on how much dreaming you did, because when you're dreaming, it's not restful. Because you're close to awake state, and then there's a state of sleep when you're not dreaming. And then they have this thing, you know, when you're dreaming, there's different things that go on in your autonomic nervous system, rapid eye movements and different things, palpitations and things. So for people to be healthy, they need some amount of, medical science says, some amount of rest. It's not dreaming. But in any case, so there's gradations when sleeping, there's gradations when awake, and there's also gradations when the living entity is in the deep sleep condition, like under anesthesia is one, or when the living entities enter into the body of Mahavishnu, or at the partial devastation when everything is suspended. So the living entity is conscious always. His question is, the pure soul in pure consciousness is pure consciousness and is never out of consciousness. It's never out of consciousness, but the living entity can be in a more covered state of consciousness. So how, his question is, how then does he become engaged in nescience? So that's a good question. It's a critical question. In philosophy, when we were in Puri, we were discussing Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's writings, and one of his statements was, without a proper understanding of jiva, without a proper understanding of jiva, there's no question of having a philosophical basis of anything else. You must have fundamental understanding of jiva, correct? You can't go another step without that. And in the various bhashyas of Vedanta Sutra, of the sampradayas, as we have spent a lot of time discussing Ramanuja Sampradaya, but also Bhaktisiddhanta, the four sampradayas, that they differ in terms of how they describe the living entity. What's the relationship? What is living entity, the relationship of the living entity to the Supreme? So what's common for the four sampradayas is they're a servant. But how that's described is different in the four sampradayas. So, then matter, what's the relationship between the living entity and matter? Well, for Madhvacharya, it's very simple. They're different. They're under the control of Ishvara, but they're different. They're just like really distinct. Anyway, here Prabhupada writes, one potency may be overcome by another potency. And that's how the living entity becomes engaged in nescience. He becomes overcome by it. But the potent is not under the influence of another potency, rather all potencies are under his control. The jiva potency, or the kshatragya shakti of the Lord, has the tendency to be overpowered, because it's marginal, by the external potency, avidya karma sangya, and in this way he is placed in the awkward circumstances of material existence. The living entity cannot be forgetful of its real identity unless influenced by the avidya potency. Because the living entity is prone to be to the influence of the avidya potency, he can never equal the supreme potent. And his last question from this section. The Lord, as the Super Soul, is situated in every living being's heart. Why then do the living entity's activities result in misfortune or misery? Srila Prabhupada's purport restates the question in a different language. Why are the living entities subjected to so many miseries and misfortunes in spite of the Lord's presence in their hearts, says the Super Soul? The body is considered a fruitful tree, and the living entity and the Lord as the Super Soul are like two birds seated in that tree. The individual soul is eating the fruits of the tree, but the Super Soul, the Lord, is witnessing the activities of the other bird. A citizen of the state may be in miseries for want of sufficient supervision by the state authority. But how can it be possible that a citizen suffers from other citizens while the chief of state is personally present? From another point of view, it is understood that the jiva, living entity, is qualitatively one with the Lord, and thus his knowledge in the pure state of life cannot be covered by nations, especially in the presence of the Supreme Lord. How then does the living entity become subjected to ignorance and covered by the influence of Maya? The Lord is the Father and the protector of every living entity, and he is known as Bhuta Brit, the maintainer of the living entities. Why then should the living entity be subjected to so many sufferings and misfortunes? It should not be so. But actually we see that it happens everywhere. The question is therefore put forward by Vidura for a solution. And last verse, oh great and learned one, my mind is greatly illusioned by the distress of this nescience, and I therefore request you to clear it up. Purport, such mental bewilderment, as represented here by Vidura, takes place for some living entities, but not for everyone. For if everyone were bewildered, then there would be no possibility for a solution by higher personalities. So we don't have to be bewildered. So what's the answer, my dear devotees? From what you understand of the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, although the living entity, along the Supreme Lord is present, right, immediately in the immediate presence of a living entity, the living entity becomes covered by nescience. Like, you know, a citizen in the presence of the chief of state, the head executive, he becomes, you know, he's in trouble. What's the answer? Oh, yes, you know. Don't look at him, I'm looking at you. What does that mean? I've made you panic stricken. Your mind went blank. Yayatam mam prapadyante. What does that verse mean? The Lord is reciprocating with them. So how does that verse apply to the question Dura is asking?
If the divinity is desiring to be in Maya, then Lord will provide him to be in Maya.
Yeah.
He wants to enjoy comfort and use. He will provide all the chances of the creation.
What would you say?
Misuse of free will.
Misuse of free will. But okay, I'm the living entity that's with super soul side by side. I'm misusing free will. Why doesn't he kick me or punch me or shake me or
Love and force
cannot be together. So loving force, he creates. Okay. He wants his own sense gratification, so he doesn't look up to the Lord. So he is more busy in his sense gratification than gratifying the sense of the Lord.
Correct. Like the example of the two birds in the tree, the bird that's jumping, trying to enjoy the fruits in the tree. He's so busy, he's not even acknowledging the presence of the other bird, or the super soul within the heart. He's not, telling them, wait a minute, there's the super souls in your heart. Not interested. Interested in sense gratification. Because that the attraction for sense gratification is so strong, the consequent deluding potency is similarly so strong. He doesn't know who he is, he doesn't know who the Lord is, just busy in sense gratification. With whatever are the standards of sense gratification that he imagines. So thus he becomes covered. Even the Lord is present, just ignoring him. Or overcome with ignorance and passion. Anything you would like to add? Everything's covered. Because of?
Lording over the material nature.
Lording it over material nature, and therefore?
Therefore, that living entity is suffering because of.
Living entity is suffering because he's lording it over material nature. Well, let's go with that a little bit, drill down a little bit. Why is it that, A implies B? Why is it that wishing to lord it over material nature implies suffering? Or results in suffering? Nescience. It's simple, it's not a trick question. Why?
Because of having this sense of gratification.
Well, let's go with really basics, because we're not the lords of the creation. That in itself, that desire, that expectation for happiness by lording over material nature, is illusory. It's not our position. There's us and there's matter, but then there's the controller and owner of both of us. The soul, the would-be enjoyer and the matter he's trying to enjoy. It's illusory. Or that in itself is nescience. Okay, let's go back to the earlier question. The earlier question is, well, wait a minute. how does he become influenced by nescience when by nature he is pure consciousness? I'll read the sentence again. The soul, the pure soul, is pure consciousness and is never out of consciousness, either due to circumstances, time, situations, dreams, and other causes. How then does he become engaged in nescience? Your answer is free will. What would you say? Wanting to lord it over. That was your reply. I can't hear you. You understand the question?
Okay.
Not clearly. The pure soul is pure... I'm reading again. The pure soul is pure consciousness and is never out of consciousness, regardless of the circumstance. Time, situations, dreams, other causes. So, the soul, pure soul, is pure consciousness and is never out of consciousness. How then does he become engaged in nescience? So the first statement is the two are incompatible. The second one is, and on top of that, there's the super soul, the protector. How does he become unprotected in the presence of the protector? Super soul sanctions, because he doesn't interfere with the free will. Now what about, how does he become engaged in nescience? Because he's pure consciousness. It's in the purport. I read it. What did the purport say? Okay, but there's a fundamental component here that you have to touch on, otherwise it's incomplete.
The potency is never equal to the supreme potent.
Yeah.
And one potency can overcome by another potency.
Yes.
Avidya potency.
Yes.
Because of that, he came to influence our illusion from
yes.
Blue state.
Yes. So we'll go back. If you just say pure consciousness, there's nescience and there's two things, how does he become covered by the lesser thing? And the answer, there's a third thing. There's a controller of both. That's in charge of the various potencies. One in his natural state is distinct from matter and nescience, the potency of nescience. But because there's a potent, the potencies can become covered. There's a third thing. Ishwara. And frankly, that's one of the things that makes impersonalism ridiculous. Because they don't acknowledge Ishwara, so they can't explain how the living entity becomes covered. They can't explain it. For that reason, there's not a third thing, not even a second thing, all there is one thing. So for nescience, it just doesn't exist. But it does exist, and when the living entity becomes covered, so the question is how, there's a third thing. Ishwara, the controller of those potencies, the potent. Because of the conscious potency, Parashakti can become covered by the avidyakarma sangyasa shakti. And there's conditions when that will happen and when it won't happen. It's not whimsical. It's where the living entity turns its attention. So that goes back to like the two birds in the tree issue, for example. Ignoring, paying attention to. Very simple. Be Krishna conscious, and there's another potency that acts, and which removes nescience. But not, we can't be free from the influence of nescience, namely suffering, and lust, and greed, and anger, and envy, and all those things, while at the same time not turning our attention to the Supreme. It's just not going to happen. We can even do good behaviors, pious behaviors, even spiritual behaviors, but unless our attention is upon the Supreme, therefore always think of me, Manmana. And the means of thinking of Krishna are the processes of bhakti. The nine processes of bhakti are various activities that bring one's attention to the Supreme. Therefore, in essence, is be attentive to the Supreme. Chant attentively to the person. Someone who's been practicing at devotional service for a long time, like, you know, an American fellow that was contacted, was in contact with Krishna consciousness during Prabhupada's presence and kind of came and went and came and went and came and went, you know, attracted by sense gratification and went. And always had some affinity and some good feelings for the devotees, but, you know, went away and then would drift back again, but never really. So he's now getting very serious. He's my age and, you know, time of running around is over. He just sent me a little note saying something really nice. He said, you normally get letters from people saying what all their problems are and this is going wrong and that's going wrong and what do I do kind of thing. So I wanted to share something different with you. He said, I have a little homemade altar in my room and that's where I do my chanting every morning. And this morning when chanting, this wonderful feeling just started welling over me. My face was opening wide like it was going to crack open, and I was feeling, I don't need to go anywhere. Krishna's present with me. He's dancing on my tongue, he's in my ear, he's before my eyes. He's in the prasadam that I offered to him. That's the internal potency. And the nescience potency, avidya, karma, sangya, is when the living entity turns attention away. And it doesn't have to be like really rude. It can be, you know, not rude, but just like very quick. We're trying to be attentive and some moments of attentiveness are there and then the mind goes to other things and other things and other things. So many other things. Just like I'm sure you experienced in the yatra that you attended, the devotees in the yatra that I just attended were saying and experiencing that from morning till night and day after day, all there was hearing and chanting and kirtan and association and serving the devotees and hearing and chanting and kirtan. And then by the end of the day, you're completely exhausted, and so you rest. And the next day, it's just immersion and hearing and chanting, and the cares and worries of all the stuff, and just like was gone, right? Yes. Gone. It's just like, hey, that's what spiritual life is. And then comes the standard question: how do we keep that same consciousness when we go back? Right? Standard questions. Or if, you know, it's not asked, it's a contemplation. I remember as a new devotee visiting the temple And my experience in visiting the temple was like that. It was like a big festival. You know, Krishna consciousness. And then as I was driving home, going home, I was, and thinking, you know, how am I going to make it to the next week when I can experience Krishna consciousness again? And so for us, it's, you know, the level of immersion in Krishna consciousness, just as the program that you all conduct daily, there's plenty of opportunity for hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping, so forth. The elements are there, because like this person that was writing to me, he lives off on his own somewhere in, you know, remote place. He doesn't have any other association other than his bead bag and his altar and Prabhupada's books. And that has its disadvantages, it has its advantages in the sense that you become, you know, where's your shelter? You become very dependent upon those, for your Krishna consciousness, those very essential activities. There's no room for complacency. Then you're sunk. Here you can kind of like ride on each other's strength a little bit. A little bit. I mean, you have to be strong individually. But my point is that the internal potency is accessed by consciously turning our energy, our attention to Krishna. And that is enhanced by those activities that are our primary activities. And most primary of all are hearing and chanting in our Bhagavat Marg. And the regulation of worship to complement, to add purification and strength. But the main thing is their hearing and chanting. Main thing. That's like restoring our Krishna consciousness. And back to if the living entity is, since the living entity is pure consciousness and never for a moment is not conscious under any circumstance, the influence of nescience comes due to this third factor. There is a Supreme Lord, there is a Super Soul, there is a controller of these other potencies who sees when we turn our attention away from Him. There's another position, there's a position for us besides the conscious of Him position. There's the deluded position. Remember a very simple example that Prabhupada gave. When you're facing the sun, what do you see? See light. And when you turn your attention, your back is to the sun, what do you see? You see shadow. And there's either shadow or light. There's not a third thing. So we see shadow, we're influenced by nescience because we turn our attention away from the Supreme. You turn your face away from the light, or turn your back to the light, you see shadow. Hey, living entity, pure consciousness, how can he see shadow? Because he turned his back. So it's free will, as you said, but even more specifically, it's that free will misuse is turning attention away from the Supreme. And proper free will use is turning one's attention to the Supreme. And then comes this other kind of question that says, yeah, but you know, I'm really trying, but I'm not seeing the light. I'm seeing the nescience. I'm bothered by my shortcomings and my bad habits and my conditioning and all my mind and all these other people and all the material energy and all that kind of thing. I'm chanting. I'm looking at the light. I'm still in nescience. It's the weakness is not in the process. The weakness is in our attachment to those residual tendencies that are not looking at the light, they're not turning our attention to the Supreme. So the behavior is there, but our conscious presence isn't there. So the behavior is good as a practice, but our conscious presence needs to be also within those practices, and we cultivate that within the framework of the practices. Rupa Goswami writes like that, or Prabhupada says it in Nectar Devotion. It's not the activities of devotional service per se, it's the love with which and the devotion with which we offer those activities. Someone else can take an incense stick and move it around. What makes our doing that anything special? Or someone else can ring a bell. What makes it special? It's with the love, whatever love and devotion, whatever wish we have to serve and please the Supreme Lord and purify ourselves that way. Other people clean the floors. When we clean the floor for Krishna, it cleanses our heart. It's the devotion, it's the bhakti, the devotion with which we do, the consciousness behind the activity that we're doing. I was using this phrase repeatedly, and the devotees picked it up, particularly the youth. Be present. Consciously be acting in your relationship with the Supreme, and Nesrin's goes. You can't stand. We're all eternally servants. So if we're all eternally servants, what's the difference between this servant and that servant? It's the consciousness of that service. So the sense gratification component is, you know, I'm very devoted to sense gratification. And that means that covers my relationship with the Supreme. I can't do both at the same time. They're incompatible. Light a fire and pour water on it. They're incompatible. Okay, any discussion?
The way to move from illusion or sense gratification tendency is to consciously feel the presence of the Lord while doing these different activities like hearing, chanting.
We say consciously feel the presence of the Lord. Like that example that this individual that wrote to me. He wasn't like straining, let me feel the presence of the Lord. I don't know exactly what he was, but it wasn't like, I want to have that experience. He didn't know, you know, he was not expecting the experience. He was, but certainly, immersed in the activity of hearing, and so he was, through that hearing with attention, he was bringing his attention to the Supreme Lord, then the Lord gave some nice experience of his presence. So, I would, I'm just modifying your language a little bit. It's desiring to be consciously aware of our relationship with Krishna as we're doing our services of life, starting with especially hearing and chanting. Okay. I cut you off. Did you want to say something further?
No,
that's it? Okay. Anything else? Something?
Hearing. Throughout the day, we have to, when doing our occupation duty also, we can hear some.
Yeah. So there's quantitative and there's also qualitative. Here throughout the day, quantitative. And it has its effect. Even if you're asleep, literally. But better to be awake, and better to be wide awake, like specifically awake to your relationship with the Supreme Lord and your relationship with those who are representing the Supreme Lord, who are very important in your life. Be attentive to that relationship while you're hearing and chanting and remembering. So hearing throughout the day is great. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.